Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Saturday. And welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show here on Blog Talk Radio. And the time is now 6.04 p.m. on the East Coast, 3.04 p.m. on the West Coast. The day is April the 10th. Now, I think the flyer said the 13th, so I apologize for that date. My graphic designer put that out like really quick. I got to go back and make sure that that was the issue, but the date is off, I believe. So I have to take a look at that again and make sure. But yeah, it's today, the 10th, 2021, and it's a beautiful day here in the ATL, even though they were telling us it was going to be thunderstorms all day and all evening long. But the day is not over, so there's no telling what might happen next. So as I wait for my co-host to join momentarily, and I know that a few of them had a lot of plans for today, so not everybody's going to be here today, unfortunately. A lot of things going on and, with the great weather, at least here. I don't know about where you are, but the great weather that's happening here, I can see people trying to get things done. But I got to be here. You know, I got to do this. I'm always going to be here and do this every Saturday. So the topics that we're going to get to, though, today, been a crazy week, as usual. Unfortunately, we lost DMX, passed away at 50 years of age. That's young. You know, when we were younger, we used to think that 50 was old. That's still young. right? So according to the story, he had suffered a heart attack at his home on life support. But there was conflicting stories. There were stories coming out on social media that he had passed, and then his manager. There was another one. In fact, Cotton Campbell had called me and brought it to my attention where the manager said, no, he hasn't passed yet. You know, he was on life support for a while. So someone, I guess, had to make the decision, or I'm not sure if there was someone made a decision to take him off of it, because sometimes, you know, it depends on the loved one's wishes. Now, not saying that he was able to speak or anything, I can't say. But, you know, at some point, some people are left up to making the decision if they want them to stay alive in a vegetative, you know, in that state where there's just nothing more that they can do. They're not going to come back. They're basically brain dead. So that's what was going on for a moment. And then it was finally announced that he had died the other day. Wow. When I think about his music, I mean, and just his style was just like no other. I mean, there was no other rapper that rapped the way he did. You know, his voice was just so commanding. And his music, just so different and off the chain compared to others during the time when he hit the stage, or when he hit the airwaves, and then, boom, he gets in the movies and was good. He was good. He played his roles, you know. Yeah, he played those roles, you know, like he was like a veteran actor. And it's sad, you know, 50 years. Such a talent. Then I see here someone had posted that Beyonce and Jay-Z are going to buy all his masters, wait a minute, is it buy all the masters, buy his music? Somewhere I have to pull that up, but where he's going to, or they are going to get his music and divide it up, or divide the money up. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but I have to pull that up among his 17 children. This is what I'm reading, or this is what I'm saying, but this is what I'm going to go ahead and pull up. Among his children. That's good. That's very good. Glad to see folks step up and do something to help the family. Because just imagine all the music that's playing now and that's being sold down. Pretty sure a lot of his material is being bought up, like all other artists. When they, you know, the term is that you work more when you're dead. I know that sounds morbid, but it's true in many cases, as we all know, is that a lot of people are worth more when they pass away because the music sales, start buying it, start watching the movies and buying the movies, buying the DVDs, all that type of stuff, hoarding them. You know, somebody's getting paid. Somebody's getting, let me go back to this. So let me just read up a little bit on this. For some of you that don't know. Actually, his name was Earl Simmons, known by his stage name, DMX. He was an American rapper, just according to this article, a songwriter and actor. He began rapping in the early 1990s and released his debut album, It's Dark and Hell is Hot, in 1998. To both critically acclaimed and commercial success, selling 251,000 copies. Let me slide this over so I can read it better. Within its first week of release. He was born December 18th, 1970, in Mount Vernon, New York. He died, unfortunately, on April the 9th of this year in White Plains, New York. Albums, it's dark and dark and hell is hot. Also, let's see, flesh of my flesh, plus Blood of My Blood, Grand Champ, The Great Depression, Year of the Dog, Undisputed. Let's see, what else? Mixtape, Unleashed and Unreleased, Dog Eats Rabbit, Walk With Me Now, just a host of stuff, even live at Woodstock and DMX Riders in 2017. Let me back up here and continue here a little bit more information for you guys to check out. Okay, so as I was saying, in 1999, which included the hit single Party Up, Up in Here, and then his 2003 singles, Where the Hood At and X Gonna Give It to You, were also commercially successful. DMX was featured in films such as Belly, Romeo Must Die, Exit Wounds, Cradle to the Grave, and Last Hour. In 2006, he starred in the reality television series DMX Soul of a Man, which was primarily aired on the BET cable television network. 2003, he published of his memoirs entitled E-A-R-L, which is Earl, the autobiography of DMX. So the guy stayed busy, you know. I mean, he had a lot of things. He still had a lot of things going, and like I said, I was really impressed with his acting in the movies that he played. So let me open up the mic here for a guest co-host. He's always welcome. He stops by when he has time, but I do appreciate him. Mr. Time and Chip, how are you doing today, my brother?
I am good, brother. Man, shoot, once I got my workout done and fed my face, I'm good. You know, I'm good. Yes. How y'all doing? I'm really well, also, Mike, I'm excited. My baby sister came home today from the hospital, COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, man, she came home today. Yeah, man, I was, man, you know, I was, soon
right.
as I heard the news, I was, you know, it jacked me up, man. I was shaking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I called her from the, you know, I said, you know what, I got to call. Maybe she'll answer. I don't know. And she picked up the phone. Hey, Tyler. And I was just, you hear your little sister, man. You know, she, you remember as a little kid, and all of a sudden, you know, here she is, a mother of three, married. And she said, I just want to get back to my baby this time. And I said, you just got to be strong, girl. You got to be strong. Do what they ask you to do. And they, you know, she said, well, they thinking I could go home by, you know, by, they thought Thursday. But she just sent me a text, and she went. She said she came home today. So I was, man.
Fantastic.
I was almost in tears again. I said, oh, man.
Right,
thank
right.
Lord.
Now I want to ask you, when she went, did they have to put her on a ventilator while she was there?
They put her on oxygen. Yeah, she had
on
to
oxygen.
Be, because they were trying to get her oxygen level up. Now, my sister's a little heavy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she has blood. I know she doesn't have diabetes, and she does. I don't think she has high blood pressure. I don't know. I didn't know if she had any underlying illnesses, but you did hear that most of the people that are getting COVID now are younger.
Right.
My sister's 49, you know,
okay.
So from 49 down to about 27. Those are the people who are getting COVID. Because everybody else, the old people, been getting, you know, they've been getting their vaccine.
Right, right.
Vaccinated, you know. So I was.
And then when you look at it, too, younger people, well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it's that time of year, spring break, all that type of stuff. Folks want to get out, you know.
But they think,
you know,
they
cold
think
person.
Like, you know, they think. But, you know, they think they're bulletproof. You know, they think they're bulletproof. You know,
yeah, true.
I got friends who got young sons, and they said, boy, you why are you over there? Oh, mama, it ain't no thing. Y'all crazy. It ain't, you know, they just hard-headed. And they don't understand, you know, can't even, this one girl I've been trying to talk to, I can't even see her because her pops won't go get the vaccine. So she's scared that if she goes out, she might take, even though she got her shots and her mama got a shot, but daddy won't get a shot.
Oh, okay. Wow.
You know, and she's afraid. She's afraid that she might bring something home to her dad. So we just talk on the phone, you know. Yeah. So
well, now let me ask you this. But now, granted, okay, and I just want to ask you a few questions and see, you know, what your response is. And we're going to switch it up there. But you saw with this this individual who worked for CNN and MSNBC took the vaccine and died just recently. Now that's all over social media. She just died. I can't say that she died from taking the vaccine, but I would think that some people would be allergic to something. Not everybody.
But they got it.
It's just like.
Yeah, but they got.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I just want to know. I'd have questions. I just want to have some. I would have questions of did she have any underlying illnesses? Did she only receive the first dosage? You know, did she have a, because some people, like you just said, have certain reactions to the vaccine. But not everybody. Some people who are 90-some-odd years old take both shots, they cool. Didn't even have any side effects. Other people who may have allergies or something, you know, it affects them totally different. I didn't have any problems. I took the Pfizer, you know. I thought I was going to have some issues. No, didn't. But everybody else, oh, yeah, your arm going to hurt. No, my arm didn't hurt. Well, you're going to end up with, no, I ain't going to end up with nothing, you know. I told her, the main thing you need to worry about, making sure I'm not in the hospital and I'm not fighting for my life. So they're going to have to do some type of research and find out there's got to be something else going on other than just saying that because the vaccine killed her. Because how long after she got the vaccine did she end up dying? You know, was it
you know,
week,
I have to pull
weeks?
Up that article, and I'm sorry, I just really rushed in to do the show, and so I didn't really have my my screens set up to the articles like I normally do, but I had to pull that up. But it wasn't long. It really wasn't long, because she had even posted on social media where she went and, you know, everything was cool and this, that, and the other, and then I think it was just a couple of days of that. But I'll have to pull that up because it is being posted on social media of her passing. But the question, which I've said before, has always been, I don't know what's in the cocktail, as they call it, right? I don't know what, you know, is in that cocktail as far as what
well,
every company
don't
is
want to take it. Well, some people, I'm sure you heard this. Some people saying they don't want to take it because, one, they're highly religious, and they think that it was made from, you know, dead fetuses, you know, aborted fetuses, you know. So, and, my thing is, are we going to go down that road? You know, is it, you know, do or die? Or, you know, are you going to get, I don't know. Because they're trying to pull everything. We have so much disinformation that we don't even trust science anymore. Okay, yeah, they've had some mistakes, but you still take Tylenol. Remember when they had the Tylenol scare? You still take it today.
True.
They tell you, take ibuprofen. Make sure you eat some. Some people don't. You got people take 800 Motrin. You got people getting strung out on opioids. But you ain't stop opioids, you know. And here you got a virus. You don't even know if you got it. I was asymptomatic. I didn't even know I had it. But I could have went, if I had in a quarantine, I could have took it and took it to other people and killed them. So
true.
My thing is, the percentages is not on their side as far as, you know, things that are happening to them, that from what's happening with people. It's still a very low percentage and a more of a higher percentage of people living and having less issues than people, a lot of people who are having, like in, you know, Colorado, they had 11 people, okay? But still, they shut it down, which is good. I think anytime you have a surgery, you got to check it out. You know, someplace else, I think it was Texas, they had some issues with the vaccine, but that was, I think one was the Johnson and one was the Moderna. But mm-hmm. eventually they may have to give everybody a booster. You may have to, you know. But I still say things are going well. You know, I even talked to a cat who's Cuban from, you know, he said, oh, no. A Trump supporter said he ain't going to get the, he's not going to get the vaccine. If I got to go, ship, I got to go. You know, I don't mess with that. I said, did you get the polio vaccine? Oh, no, you're lying. You did get it. And you got a tetanus shot when you was a kid. And you didn't know nothing about it. Dude, you're not, I don't get cold. I don't get, I said, all this Johnny badass, out of nothing happens to me. This is a hoax. I don't believe. I said, y'all, that's how y'all get into QAnon. That's how QAnon yank people in. Because they don't believe nothing.
Now, let me run this by you, though. Let me run this by you because I just pulled up the article, and this is an update.
Okay.
This is through Deadline. Her name is Midwin Charles, and it says, update with reactions. Legal analyst Midwin Charles, familiar – she's a beautiful woman, too – familiar to viewers for her frequent appearances on CNN, MSNBC, HLN, and Bloomberg TV, died Tuesday. She was 47. Her death was announced by her family on social media. A cause of death and other details were not specified. Quote, it's with our profound, heavy heart and the deepest sadness that we announce the untimely passing of our beloved Midwin Charles, her family said in a Twitter statement. She was known to many as a legal commentator on television, but to us, she was a devoted daughter, sister, aunt, niece, and cousin. Our lives are forever changed, and we will miss her for a lifetime. Now, let me go into this. Let me back up and see where it says about her taking the – let me find where it says where she took the shot. And they said this was – according to this one article, they said this was just days after she took the shot. I'm trying to find that.
Yes, she was. It says here, Midwin Charles, prominent defense attorney, she said on her final Instagram post last month, she's not feeling well. She said that on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, sadly, happy hour tonight is canceled. I'm not feeling well. See you next Friday. Charles posted that on March 19th, along with an emoji of clinking champagne glasses. Charles' family announced her death on Tuesday. You know, and she was known, okay, they said that, but known, thanks to advance love and prayers. Appeared on CNN, that's And that came from the New York Post. But they didn't give, you know, any rundown. And I'm checking.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to see where they're trying to tie in her taking shot and the timing of that. That's what I'm trying to track down because I've seen some other people post it that her death came shortly after taking the shot, but I'm not finding it right now in these articles that I'm running through. In fact, I don't see anything.
I just read MSNBC. That had put something out. Okay, cause of death. Let's look at that. What happened to Midwin Charles?
And I mean, because the timing can be questionable shortly after her taking the vaccine. That is questionable. She was only 47. So that has to be questionable. And, you know, when they do an autopsy, that young age, you know, what could have been happening? But I mean, and it goes back to like you and I were just saying, I don't know what's in these cocktails that they come up. You got all these different pharmaceutical companies coming up with different vaccines, and we don't know what's in them. Actually, I mean, it's just like, you know, when you buy a bottle of, like you say, Tylenol or any kind of medicine, it gives you the ingredients, but the vaccine, you're not reading the ingredients. I'm not
but
reading
the information, it. But the information on what's in the vaccine is online.
Okay.
So either one, you can go on. You can go and look up what Pfizer is in the within the Pfizer vaccine. It'll tell you. They got all the info. They exposed all of it. Because this girl, like I said, this girl, I was saying her parents wouldn't take it. She was so she had to convince her mother to take it because, you know, and she told her, she said, well, we don't know what's in it. Same thing. So she went online and did the research on it, and they told her, you know, what was in it. And there was nothing,
So the girl went online, the daughter went online, did the research,
for her
told her parents.
Yeah, for her 80-something-year-old mother.
So the mother, right, so her mother believed it and went ahead and did it, but the father hasn't done it yet, correct?
The father, and the father's a doctor. And you know
but
what?
But he won't take it.
No.
Okay.
He
that's
won't
an
take
interesting.
It. No, but no.
That's
his,
a
is,
being a doctor.
His is for religious reasons.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Not because he's doing it because, you know, he's a religious reason. But he said no, he's taking it.
Wow, that's interesting. So the
Yeah, but they're in their 80s. I mean, they're 80. You know, they're like 80-some years old. You know, and they need to be taking this. You know, they need to take. Or 70s, yeah, late 70s. Early, I mean, they're in the danger zone. You know, and they should take it. And I got, you know, especially people with, you know, an old person's immune system is not as strong. That's why they started with the elderly.
Right.
You know.
But like
and,
I said, I think the reason why it's hitting the younger population now, as I said before, due to the fact that now we're in that time of year. It's spring break. It's you know, the weather's getting better. Granted, this started around this time last year, right? And everybody was like, oh, okay, no, we're going to stay, and everything was shut down. But now as states start to open up more, then I can see where younger people would get the virus more so than older people because they're getting out more. Older people are going to just go do what they got to do and then go home. Young kids are going to get out there when they hit the beach. They want to go party. They want to be with their friends and this, that, and the other. Correct? I mean, that's just common sense. You know, it's like, hey, the weather's getting better. I got to get out. Oh, okay. All I got to do is wear my mask? Okay, cool. And then they're going to take it off, you know. So
now
I can see
what they put down. Her family said her death was not announced by her family. Her death was announced by her family on social media. A cause of death and other details were not specified. You know, so they didn't, you know, you'd have to, I mean, and she's on, you have to go on Twitter or something to, you know, but that's it. They don't have, you know, they don't have anything else. Now, I did see something where it said Midwin Charles got into a car accident, but I don't think that's it.
Now, I saw an article where, and I'm trying to pull it up now, that says that 40% of Marines are not going to take, or have said they will not take the virus. Yeah, it says, in fact, the vaccine. It says nearly 40% of Marines have declined COVID-19 vaccine. Okay. This is interesting. 40%. Damn near half.
Well, but you know 49% of Trump supporters are not taking it.
So are you saying that these 40% of Trump... Are you saying that these 40%
of white males who are Trump supporters said they're not taking the vaccine? Yeah. Of white males said they're not doing it. And now see here, they hear we didn't broke it.
Okay, I had to turn down the volume on this here. But so 49% of Trump supporters are not going to take it. But this article
male
says
male Trump supporters.
Male, right, male. But let me just run through this just a little bit, just to give you a gist of the story here. Nearly 40% of U.S. Marines are declining COVID-19 vaccinations, according to data provided to CNN on Friday by the service. The first branch is the first branch to disclose service-wide numbers of acceptance and declination. As of Thursday, approximately 75,500 Marines have received vaccines, including fully vaccinated and partially vaccinated servicemen and women. About 48,000 Marines. Okay, and they didn't break it down by gender, but it says about 48,000 Marines have chosen not to receive vaccines for a declination rate of 38.9%. CNN has reached out to the other services for acceptance and rates. The corresponding acceptance rate for vaccinations among Marines is 61.1%. It is not far off the military estimate of 2/3 or about 66%. That's interesting, but you said 49% of Trump supporters, and here the Marines here is 40%.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Oh, well. Hold on a minute. Yeah. I got a hand that's waving here, 678-532. Welcome. I'm not recognizing the number. I'm sorry. It's just been a real crazy week for me. If I should, then I apologize. I'm going to open up your mic. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike. This is Cindy.
Cindy, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing just
all
fine.
Right. Fantastic. Thanks for calling in.
Well, yeah, I told you I'd be listening.
Okay.
I haven't taken the vaccine.
You haven't? Okay.
I'm 67 years old. I don't know too much about side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not too sure what's in this vaccine. And my question is, after the 6 months or whatever it runs out, what happens then? I mean,
that's a good question.
Are they going to have more vaccines following? I mean,
oh yeah, you'll have to get a booster. It'll probably end up being like a shot, like the flu shot. You know, they're thinking because they have these different variants that are out there, and that the virus is getting. You know, that's why they wanted people to get protected. But those that don't, okay, like I was asymptomatic. I had COVID. But I was asymptomatic. I had no symptoms. But I could have took, if I had went around people that I didn't know, I could have spread it. But I stayed at home, and I was under quarantine for 11 days. And then I went out and I got the vaccine. I got the Pfizer. And now as of probably because I took it on the 28th. And it's usually, it kicks in, you're supposed to be fully protected after 2 weeks after you get your second shot. So, you know, 2 weeks after, sometime next week, I'll be fully done. It'll be kicked in.
I'm going to be going to the doctors in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to see what she has to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have an underlying, like I have COPD and I have a thyroid issue.
Mm-hmm.
And
Cindy, you know what? I'm glad that you asked that question. You know, what happens? And like Simon just said, where it'll be just like getting the flu shot. You'll probably have to do it once every so many whatever. I mean, I guess that's the game plan. But it still goes back to my question of where what's in the vaccine. Now, Simon said that you said it was Pfizer who tells you everything of what's in it.
Yeah,
right?
You can look it up online.
Yeah. Now, is it just Pfizer or are all the other two or three telling you? I think it's two more.
Moderna and Johnson, they all should be able to let you know what's in them.
Right, what's in it. So because then if you can look at it, because there's certain ingredients that people are allergic to. or that could be detrimental, right? I mean, some people can take, but there's some folks who can't take, say, for instance, for me, I can't take penicillin, but I do biotin. It's a different thing. Honestly, found that out a long time ago. Penicillin, no. Biocillin is a little bit different. You follow me?
Yeah.
And found that out a long time ago.
Cindy, I was going to say to you, I take methotrexate, which is an autoimmune, I have autoimmune disease. And I went to my rheumatologist and asked her, could I take the vaccine? They said, yes,
okay.
But I could not take my medication for a week. So it's good you go to your doctor.
Okay.
They said, don't take your medication for a week and then take it because my medication suppresses my immune system. Okay. So you would go to your doctor and have a conversation with them. They'll give you the rundown, and they probably even tell you the one to take that's going to be best for you.
Okay.
Say that again.
I said those are good questions to ask. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it because these vaccines, I mean, it scares the living crap out of me. And with everything opening up,
all that disinformation that came out, okay, first they told you the virus was a hoax. Then they told you that, it'll be gone and it'll be gone in a day. It'll be gone in 15 days. But people said it died.
I'm sorry, but they was one person. But anyway, it was one person who said it was a hoax. Okay, but go ahead. It was one person who said it.
Right, and then you had the people in his circle were also doing it. They were also throwing out bad information. They had governors from other states that were putting out bad information, and so people didn't know that. Remember, he was Trump wanted you so to rush to get this vaccine, but he didn't have a plan. He didn't have a plan on how you're gonna get the vaccine into people's arms.
Right.
You know,
but here's the thing. I have to intervene for a minute because I have to say this.
Go ahead.
Real quick, I want to say that, and I said that on purpose because I said it was a person who said it. And, of course, other people latched onto it and did it or kept on repeating the false narrative of the whole thing. There's no way in hell you can call a pandemic that's killing people around the world a hoax. You just can't. I don't get it. I don't get it. I can see where you could say in one country or whatever that it's where that country is doing that on purpose. But now some folks said, well, it's the New World Order. Every country is involved. No, come on now. Everybody is in cahoots.
And it's a deep state. This is the deep state. I said, boy, y'all, they can sell y'all anything. They can sell you sand on the moon. I mean,
Wait a minute. You remember that song? I got oceanfront property in Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You want to buy it? Go ahead. And people bought it. It's sad.
Yep, they did, Mike. They did. And they're still buying it.
They bought that oceanfront property. Excuse me?
And that's why QAnon is still around.
Yep. But you know what? I don't want to do the Donald Trump hour. I don't want to do that.
No.
I mean, we already talked about, I don't want to do that. He's trying to make his comeback. He's doing this big event this evening, from what I understand, to raise money for the GOP. Yeah. He's doing a big event, I think, this evening or tomorrow evening. I think it's this evening, and then one of his staunch, his biggest supporters, Mr. Gates, is in a world of trouble. But we'll talk about that at a later date. with Oh, wow. That's a deep thing that just came up. All right, so before we get to the top hour, we have about 20 minutes left. I want to touch on, which we already talked about, DMX. I already touched on that, and thanks for all the people who are chiming in right now. Thanks for listening. I want to touch on the trial, week two. And I don't call it the Derek Chauvin trial, murder trial. I don't call it that. I call it the trial of the murder of George Floyd. See, there's a difference. I've noticed that certain networks say the Derek Chauvin murder trial. Don't popularize his name. Don't put his name up there. Yeah, he's on trial for murder. But remember who was killed, first and foremost, right? I don't know how many of you have been watching it. I've been watching as much as I can when it's possible, and I've gone back and look at it and everything. And I'm looking at some damning testimony or testimonies. The coroner who did the autopsy spoke this week. And wow, what he said was damning to the defense, riveting, because when you look at the details that he goes into, in fact, the other guy, I forgot his name, but this cat who just spoke the other day, which I got to try to pull this up. And normally, you guys, I apologize. I would normally have my screens up. But I don't know, Timon, have you been following this? Because the one who did the autopsy said it was not from, and this is what the defense wants to say, it was from this black man's drug use, his health, that he happened to die that day. I mean, think about this bullshit.
Right.
You want to say that he just happened to die this day when he had a confrontation with the police. Had that not happened, you're going to tell me he would have walked out the house, I'm sorry, out the store and probably just dropped dead? I'm trying to understand that whole concept or that whole thing that the defense is trying to sell the jury.
Well, all the people from the pathologist, pulmonary specialist, to the guy who did the initial autopsy, stated that a healthy man would have died from that. So don't even try to go down the line of how many drugs or whatever. You know, they knew, but the thing is, you cut off oxygen. The MMA fighter told him, dude, we know that move. That's a death move. But you kept your knee, and also the doctor said, notice how he lifted his foot up off the ground.
Correct. There you go.
And
that,
so that
right
means
there.
That means you were rocking. You were rocking, and he said what got him, he was trying to get air. He was trying to get little breath, and he couldn't. And then all of a sudden, even while he stopped speaking, he kept his knee on his neck. On the concrete,
and
bro?
You know what? When they showed those pictures, and the up close, and you know, it's amazing how they were able to zoom in of the position of the officer's knee, not just the knee, but like you just said, the foot was off the ground. So it's not like you're putting weight on your foot; you just have the knee just bracing. There's a difference, right? You can have the knee just to break the person's head to keep them from moving it. But when you lift your foot, you're putting weight now. There's a difference.
Right.
And so, when I saw that, I said, wow, that's deep. And then the one individual who testified and said, you're looking at 91 pounds of pressure.
Right.
91 pounds. He even calculated the gear that the officer wears. of pressure on this man, let alone the other two officers pinning him down. And when he broke it all the way down to where just the response of the human body, it's not the response of George Floyd. It was the response that any one of us would more than likely go through, because that's the nature of the human body, to respond. It responds.
Right.
It tries to save itself. The first thing, I remember back as a kid, remembering videos, or not videos, because we had films, but it gave us a breakdown of how the body works. You know, back when I was in like sixth grade, you know, they had a video where when you eat food and you poop, they didn't call it poop or dookie or shit. They just said, and that's where your body deposits ashes. They called it ashes in the video. And it was a little cartoon, you know. But then in this situation here, to me, it's almost the same thing. It's telling you the body responds to certain things. First thing, it's going to try to get oxygen to the brain. The brain has to keep alive, correct?
Right.
If the brain dies, everything else goes. And it sends signals. And so it sends signals to the body. Do whatever you can to keep the brain alive, first and foremost, from my understanding. The heart is going to keep on pumping the blood, but the brain has to get the oxygen. It's got to get oxygen to it to keep functioning. The brain already sends signals to other parts of your body to react. And that's exactly what that doctor was saying, that George Floyd's body was reacting to what his brain knew. I'm not getting oxygen. When he said, I can't breathe, the brain is saying, I can't think. I can't react. You're shutting me down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to shut down. It's just like a computer.
Well,
a computer is a brain.
Also, when the boys start calling for his mama, that's what really jacked people up. That old man, when that old man said that, man, hey, that really messed dude up, man.
Yep.
That really messed him up. That old man was on there, man. He said, I couldn't do anything. Everybody, all those people are going to have PTSD who watched that man die.
Correct.
All of them.
And you know what?
That boy said,
you know what? Go ahead.
That boy said he said, why didn't I just give him back the $20, man? And that dude would still be alive today. He said, but I was doing my job.
And that boy is going to live with that. Because, see, here's the thing. He was told by, which you guys probably saw, I think that was in the first week of the trial. In fact, I believe it was. But he said that his boss said, if you ever get a counterfeit bill, it's going to come out of your pay. Now, here's the thing. It was proven that was a counterfeit bill. And I think I said this the other week. I work at Lowe's. I see counterfeits all the time. I see folks try to pass counterfeits. I'll be like, hey, you got another form of payment? Whenever I'm on the register, I'll be like, hey, this ain't happening. This machine here that scans it says no. And I had a guy go, huh? It ain't real? Why are you asking me that? Man, someone just gave me those. Someone just gave you counterfeit dollars? Or they paid you in counterfeit dollars? No, you're trying to run a scam. But the bottom line is this. Even if it was a real $20 bill, it only costs 11.2 cents. To make a $20 bill. That's the true value of that piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You can go take a look and see how much it costs to make every piece of currency. Some currency costs more than the value, like a penny. It costs more to make a penny than what it's worth. But a $20 bill, well, just like a $20 bill, it costs less. 11.2 cents. So technically, if that was a real 20, George Floyd was to over 11.2 cents.
Right.
Let that marinate for a moment, everybody. A piece of paper, 11.2 cents, if it was a real $20.
But, Mike, that goes to where our values are. That goes to where humanity is. We always talk mm-hmm. about money. They made everything about money. Why do you think people, you know, didn't want to get the vaccine or shut their business down? Because it was about money. Everything was about, they didn't care about dying. They cared about the money. And the dude who called, he was worried about the money. Like he said, the young said, man, I could have just gave him back that 20. Then I go outside and I watch them kill. He called the cops. This man got killed over a $20 bill that ain't worth nothing but a dollar. And they
not
sat there for nine minutes and 26 seconds with his face crushed to that nasty-ass concrete. Four guys on one dude, handcuffed. You done went through all the trainers who trained him, okay? You done talked to the chief, and you done talked to all the medical specialists. I don't care, you can go get as many more as you want. You killed that boy. Flat out. This is a clear-cut deal. They can say, oh, he had drugs, and it doesn't matter. That man, I don't care if they did say he died from the drug. He still should go to jail because he was the cause of him dying. He was the cause of him dying. Just like when they choked out Michael Brown or Michael Gardner up there in New York. You got five guys or four guys on this dude taking him down. You can see the brother probably had diabetes or, you know, he's a big dude, probably had high blood pressure. They cut them, they put him in a chokehold, man, and you killed him. None of them guys went to jail. And all this stuff, and they said, oh, we're not after black people. Well, all the, but how many, you know, how many more guys got to die? And so when the media this and the media that, and Trump told, I don't know if you remember, and I know you don't want to make it the Trump thing, but let me tell you how this fake news stuff started. this media stuff. I don't know if you remember when Trump walked out on the 60-minute interview.
Yeah, I saw that.
And homegirl Leslie Stahl said, I remember when you said that. If I say fake news enough, it will discredit the news people and the rest of, and the public won't believe it. I don't remember saying that. She said, yes, you did. You did say it. It's all a plan. And it worked. It shows the ignorance and the gullibility of our society.
Right.
Some people say Floyd would be alive if he'd have did what the cops told him to do. That's what they say. Oh, he had drugs.
A lot of them say that. That's true. That's true.
You know.
That's
but
true.
But what do you value a life? You don't value a life. And that's mm-hmm. what I'm talking about. And you know what? Along with George Floyd, the pandemic has exposed the inequalities of our society. NPR just did a thing on all the highways that were put in the different cities and the, mm-hmm. and the racial deal behind them, that they built certain freeways to go through black neighborhoods to block them, to tear down those particular neighborhoods. You know, like, I don't know if you knew, the 10 freeway out here in L.A. was built to block out black folks from the deal, as well as Boyle Heights. They put them freeways there, did it in, you know, Illinois. They went through neighborhoods. They were all part of the racial divide. NPR just did a great thing on that. It's about 7 minutes long, NPR did. So I'm telling you, man, all this stuff, you know, George Floyd and all of that, it's all connected to me. Really comes down to it. And it's a shame how people
I agree with you.
You know,
it's a shame. It's a shame. And the thing is that where, you know, as I said before, I don't get to see all of the trial. I try to look at it as much as I can, but I make it a point to try to, you know, when I, if I'm at work and I can't see it live and everything, I make it a point. And in fact, there's times I even record it because I want to go back and look at this. For you guys who are listening, this is historical. This really is a historical situation here because I've seen where folks who respond and they related to the Rodney King situation, right? Fortunately, Rodney King lived. Unfortunately, when the verdict came in the Rodney King beating trial, L.A. burned, and not just L.A. There was other cities across the country that went crazy because we saw exactly what we saw. And now it's like the point of where you're going to believe us or your lying eyes.
Right.
You're going to believe us or your lying eyes. Yeah, it's a video, but you're not seeing the whole gist of the whole thing. You're not understanding what's going on right here. He's resisting. There's seven of you freaking cops right here. Seven of you. You got guns, badges, you got billy clubs, you got everything you need. You're supposed to be trained. You got to beat this man like this? And how long ago was that? Thankfully, he didn't die of it. And his daughter, his daughter, Laura King, I've been blessed to have two conversations with her. I did a live stream some years ago, and she was just on about almost a year ago. She was here on the show and shared about her foundation. And she's doing some great things, you guys, in L.A. She's feeding the homeless. She's having all kinds of things. She's doing, you know, like a real father's real men thing and honoring men who are actually real fathers and doing things for their families. But she has to lose her dad. Or actually, she has to deal with the whole thing that's at work. That's how we know her from what happened. Fortunately, Rodney King lived. But George Floyd is dead. And the video compared to Rodney King to George Floyd is much more damning. See, the Rodney King one was from a distance. One of them old VHS cameras. But this are cell phones, many of them. And like I said, when they did the testimony, when that one expert did the testimony, and he showed where former officer Derek Chauvin's foot was off the ground, that tells you all his weight was on that man's neck.
Right.
All his weight was. You know, they have a term, this is an open and shut case. I can't say it right now. I really can't because I don't know what this jury is thinking. I really don't. We thought that the case with Rodney King was open and shut. That's what we thought back then. But look at the difference between Rodney King police chase and the things that have happened all through time, the police shootings and stuff like that, all through, ever since Rodney King, look at all the shit that has happened.
Right.
Look at all the shit that's happened and cops have gotten off. And like I said, don't get me wrong. I'm not one to go out there and say, you know, F the police, all cops are, no, that's not true. For the people who say that, you're wrong. Not all cops are bad. You have some. This officer happened to be one, and there's records of him. How is it that they can go into the history of George Floyd's drug habit or whatever, but they can't go into the history of the complaints on this cop?
Right.
How come they can't bring that up? I was always taught that fair exchange is no robbery.
Right.
So if you could talk about his drug use, how about the complaints that other individuals had about this officer? Was he reprimanded at all?
He should have been.
That's what I wonder. Real quick, I want to say, hey, you guys, if you got any questions or comments, if you want to comment into the conversation, you're more than welcome. Go ahead and hit the number one. I see some numbers here on the board. I appreciate you listening into the show. We do have our guests coming up momentarily. But if you have any questions or comments, and let's see, if you're listening online, you can go ahead and call into the show at 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. You're listening to the TMGS. I'm going to take a quick music break and come back, and looks like our guest is here. So let me just make sure before I jump to conclusions and make sure that he's here. Mr. Joe Foxworth, our guest. Hey, you know what? Now, I'm going to tell you guys a story when we come back. We're switching gears right about now. And I'll tell you the story when we come back. But let me play this track here. And this is something I play at the start of the show every Saturday right now. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network. I said TMGN, okay. The time is now 7:06 p.m. Today is April the 10th, 2021. And thanks for tuning in to the show this Saturday. Hope everything is going well for you wherever you are in the part of the world. Right now, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest. We've been playing phone tag, but thank goodness we got it all together. Our special guest today is a writer, producer, musician, arranger, a friend of mine from way back, and I'm just so honored to have him here. Former member of Motown group, Ozone. Wow. Y'all remember ozone. We're going to hear a little bit of it in a minute. But please welcome to the show, Mr. Joe Foxworth. What's happening, Joe? What's up, my brother?
Hey, Big Mike. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm hanging in here in the ATL.
Right, right, right. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Right there, what you guys just heard was a piece that Joe wrote called Conversation Piece. And we got to talking about him coming on the show, and he said, hey, I got something for you, because I said, hey, look, I want to do something different with the opening theme. He said, I got something for you. Lo and behold, here's one called Conversation Piece. I love that, man, that instrument. I mean, that's nice. That's really nice. Appreciate you sharing that with us. I truly do.
Thank you very much.
So let's go back a little bit in time. Let's go back a little bit in time and try to, like, let folks know a little bit about yourself, because, you know, I can sit up here and talk all day long, but I remember back when you were in a group called Tradewinds, and you guys used to jam in Tradewinds, perform all over Pasadena, Altadena area, a group called Fifth Avenue, and then all of a sudden here came Ozone. Give us a little bit of information about Joe Foxworth and how he got into the music thing, and then let's gradually go up into the history, what happened beyond that, and how things just happened to click.
Well, first of all, I come from a large family, you know that, and my father was a pastor. He just recently passed about 3 years ago, and he was a musician, and I used to play watching him. I learned how to play watching him play the organ and piano. My father was a great musician. In junior high school, I started a band. You know, it's called Tradewinds. And we went on to win a lot of local talent shows in L.A., in Pasadena, well, in the whole Los Angeles area. And I went on to record my first single with Fifth Avenue, which consisted of members of the group T's, Derek and Tommy O.
Right.
And Darren Durst.
Yeah, the Organ Brothers. That's what they're known as in the industry, as the Organ Brothers. It'd be like, you know the Organ Brothers? Right. Tommy and Derek, right. Go ahead.
Those are my buddies. So we put together a demo and in Hollywood one day, and went walking up and down the street, Hollywood Sunset Boulevard, trying to let anybody in the business hear what we had to offer. And we went into the Motown building and ran into Stevie Wonder in the elevator, and also the Jackson's secretary. She was in the elevator also, and she asked us to come with her. She wanted to play that stuff for Joe Jackson. So we went in to play the stuff for Joe Jackson, sat down, we all excited, all six of us, the whole band, in three-piece suits now. Okay? And I remember, I'll never forget it. He heard it, and he said, "Oh, you guys really got something here, but you need to make it bigger." And I was like, "What do you mean by bigger? More tracks." So he said, "Well, come back, record it again, and come back and bring it to me, and we'll go from there." So I had just graduated from high school, and the following week I was going to attend Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee. I had a full scholarship to go there, and but that weekend, all my friends got together, and we had a party to raise money for the recording session. So that Friday and Saturday, we had a little party and raised money to go in the studio. Went in on Sunday, finished it Sunday night. Monday morning, went to go see Joe, and Joe wasn't there.
Oh, wow.
He wasn't there. And I had a plane to catch. So that kind of went downhill from there. The band kind of broke apart, and a couple of us stayed together and kept doing it, kept pushing. And I kept recording demos for people, and finally got a hold of Maurice White over at ARC. You know Maurice White of Earth and Fire. They heard the material and wanted to come out and check us out. Wanted to know who we were playing anywhere. We weren't playing anywhere. We were just rehearsing in a house in South Central Los Angeles. And they came out to the house and during our rehearsal, we prayed for them and told us to call them on Monday. Of course, we did that. And they asked me to come in, and I went in by myself. And when I got there, they were all excited, but they didn't want the whole band. They just wanted me.
Ooh.
And I couldn't leave my whole band. It was all or nothing. So I passed on that deal. You know, that was the first major deal. Yeah.
Wow, I never knew that. Wow. Yeah, because you guys were a unit, right? Yep.
Yeah.
And you look at the group, we were packed. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And what's so ironic is, like, several weeks after that, the band broke up again.
Mm.
So I reformed the group again, and the Jacksons' secretary hit us to a tour company that was under the direction of Alvin Few. He booked a lot of concerts down in the South, mainly in Atlanta.
I know Alvin.
Alvin. You know Alvin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember? You know that Dennis Edwards fiasco that we went through. But go ahead.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was before Dennis Edwards.
Right.
But so he came up to get the Jacksons to do the Triumph tour, and they were having some difficulties because of Michael, and Jermaine had already left the group basically and became an executive over at Motown because he was married to Barry's daughter.
Right.
So anyway, he decided to invest the money that he had for the Jacksons into us. So he signed us to his now record label, Lions Records. And there's Fifth Avenue. And we had our first big hit down in Atlanta, of all places.
Hmm.
Got to take a chance.
Wow.
Got to take a chance. That was another single.
Yeah.
Got
to take a chance. Okay. And so then after that, okay, so how did the Ozone thing start?
Well,
with Motown,
a lot of the guys in the band were kind of disappointed with the results of the Fifth Avenue album, and so we all started to split up, going separate ways. A few of us stayed together, like Derek and Tommy. And Rex Salas was a part of it for a minute there, too. And Darren Durris, Mark Sly, and myself. And Kirby Hamilton. Yeah, Kirby Hamilton, too, at one point. And we were nobody was working. We were all living in a house in the South Central L.A. off of Crenshaw. And
29th Street, if I recall. It was 29th Street.
That's
right?
Where the Ozone house was. Right. No. That,
right.
That
right.
Was
it was,
house.
It was over there. No, because see, I remember it was 29th Street right off of Crenshaw.
Right.
And the reason why I know that is because I used to come by and check you guys out.
Yeah, because you could hear us playing off the street.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, we were rehearsing down off of 119th and Crenshaw at the time, and friend of mine, David Crawford, producer, arranger, worked with Jesse Williams, Confunction, and a couple other people, came by and told me,
that's
Jan
Crawford. Ed Crawford's brother.
The actor. Yeah, the actor.
Yeah.
The actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the actors. Yeah.
Your high school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David told me that that Motown was looking for a new producer, songwriter, to come in and work with the group Ozone. And I had heard of Ozone for a long time because of them working with a group called High Energy that I was working with back in 76.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't really like the group that much because they didn't know where they were going as far as their direction.
Oh, wow.
And they were playing jazz and they were playing rock and they were playing this and the other. And
mm-hmm.
So he told me to check them out. And I made an arrangement with their manager, Skip Starkey, and Gwen Gordy, who I didn't know was part of the management team at the time, and came over and played some of the material for them and sang for them. And next thing I know, they wanted me to be a lead singer. Also.
Wow.
Yeah. So at that time, the group had like 8 members already. Right. So when
mm-hmm.
I came, I brought my guitarist, Darren, Durst, with me. So I said, well, you take him too. And take me and, okay, go ahead and try something out. Derek and Tommy and those guys had already started working with the group T. And
mm-hmm.
So they were already set. And so we were pretty busy at that time. And the next thing I know, here we are, Ozone, struck my thing, made it to the top 50 on the Billboard chart, and which was a shocker.
Wow. Yeah, it was a big hit, a major hit. In fact, what I want to do, I want us to continue the conversation. You share this awesome history and awesome story. If you don't mind, I want to go ahead and let our listeners listen to Strut My Thing, and we'll come right back. Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me, my friend.
Well, here we go. Here's Ozone with Strut My Thing. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network, with our special guest today, Mr. Joe Foxworth, writer, producer, musician, and singer. Well, I should say vocalist. Welcome back, you guys. Thank you for listening to the show. Wow. Strut My Thing. Hit the top 50. And
that was,
you know, still to this day, I hear this song, you know, on radio, you know. You know, DJs use it in their mixes, you know, because just got that funky, funky groove. Where did that whole idea come from? What song?
We all collectively got together one night. We used to practice all the time. That's one thing that Motown put installed in all of us. That, you know, if you're going to make it, you got to be good at it. So we practiced. We went to that whole school. And we were playing one day, and Charlie came up with the bass line. And the next thing you know, I came up with that lick. You know, the dan-it. The intro. Yeah, that was me for sure. I've always been a stickler for intros, songs.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to do something that would capture people's attention quickly. So, yeah, and that song, what's really crazy is that the first time we recorded it, we used a drum machine. And I'm telling you, it was so funky. It was incredible. We were all excited. But the engineer accidentally erased it. He erased the whole thing. So then we had to re-record it, and I needed a drummer that I knew that could play that pocket, you know, like a time, like a clock. And the kid I knew was Derek, so we got Derek Organ to come in and play the drums for us on that track. And the rest is history.
Wow. Oh, yeah, he is the pocket man. And by the way, for you guys who are listening, Derek – is one of the most, I mean, they call him the timekeeper, and
yes,
which is
indeed
really true. And if you went to a Janet Jackson concert when she released her, what was it, 2014,
Rhythm
I think
Nation.
Was the name of the album?
Yeah, the
Rhythm Nation Tour. That's him. That's him doing that tour. And his brother, also, Tommy. On guitar. In fact, he
Chucky
was
Booker.
The guitarist. I'm sorry, what did you say?
And Chucky Booker was on that tour also.
Right, Chucky Booker was there, right. And for you guys that are listening, just to let you know, Tommy, Derek's brother, is the brother that you see on the This Is It video of Michael Jackson prior to his death when they were rehearsing for the tour that didn't happen. That's Tommy Organ. So you talking about some heavyweight cats here, some serious musicians. Silas, Kipper Jones, all those cats are heavyweight. You guys are just some awesome cats from the same area. But go ahead. You were about to say something. I apologize.
I initially got the audition for that, for the Janet Jackson Rhythm Nation Tour. So I had Tommy, Derek, Darren, and I can't remember who else was playing with us, but eventually what happened was they took Derek and Tommy, and because they had gotten Chucky Booker as the musical director, so I lost out on that gig, but I was happy for my boys, though, because they deserved it, too.
Chucky Booker. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
And right after that, is when I started doing stuff for the Penitentiary 3 soundtrack with James Reese. You remember James Reese?
Yeah, I remember James Reese.
He was a big DJ in Hollywood, L.A., everybody back in the 90s, and he was one of the biggest DJs in the city at that time.
Wow.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's a trip because when I think about, you know, like, you're not talking, I mean, like, just going back, like, Lowell Silas, who became a big record producer and actually CEO at MCA. Yeah. I remember when Lowell was mm-hmm. just doing posters at record stores. Seriously.
Exactly.
He used to do the posters at Big Ben's and warehouse record stores, you know, years ago. You know, pacing them up, and all of a sudden, bam, here he is. And it was so funny. I was working at Big Ben's, turned into warehouse records, and he was doing the posters and everything. Years down the road, I'm here in Atlanta, and I'm going to a Jack the Rapper music convention, and he's the CEO. I'm like, oh, whoa. Uh-huh. And then when I spoke to him, I said, yeah, Lowell, you probably don't remember me. I said, remember that? He said, yeah, I remember you. Mm-hmm. He said, you were the manager of the video department. And I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Isn't that something? Yeah, those were everybody was, we were networking way back then.
Right. You're right. You're right. Networking. Everybody was.
And
now, I want you to just kind of touch on something here, though. Let's kind of like touch on this because we can laugh about it a little bit. But then you became the music director for the Dennis Edwards tour. No disrespect to the man because he has passed. But wasn't that an experience, that whole tour?
Oh, my God. I'll never forget it.
I won't either.
I'll never forget it. I got all my friends involved on that tour. And I'll never forget, we were going to do a date in the Bay Area. Is it the Bay Area? Yeah.
Right.
Area.
It was in fact, I mean, I could tell this story, but I'd rather you tell the story. But, right, it was Ivy's in Oakland.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was Ivy's in Oakland.
So we're up there. You know, we get up there. We set up all the equipment and everything, and
Well, hold on a minute. We have to back up and let the audience know this first. We're doing rehearsals before we go up there, right? And who was at the rehearsals driving a Volkswagen was who? The one who sung Don't Look Any Further with Dennis, right?
Saida Garrett.
Saida Garrett, right. She's at the rehearsals two nights in a row, but Dennis doesn't show up.
And I'm saying to myself, man, he must be really, really good. He must really know his stuff. Because he ain't even coming to me.
Right.
And we were we got on stage because he wanted to get on stage, remember? He goes, come on, get started. Dennis ain't here yet. I'm saying, Dennis ain't here yet. So what are we going to do? So we get on stage and we start playing some tunes and the crowd starts getting irate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They wanted to see Dennis. They didn't come to see us. They can't see Dennis.
And, right. And you guys left off. Well, you guys left off the stage because you were kind of like just kind of like. But then what happened, though, I remember this now. I remember you guys left the stage, and I remember the promoter came back there and said, well, can you guys go back on? And this and the other. And Corny Mims, who was playing bass at that time, he said, you all want us to get killed out here?
Because they were mad. That you get all that money?
Yep.
And kind of find out Dennis was still in L.A. in a hotel room doing his thing.
Right. Come to find out.
We were supposed to play down in L.A. at the following week I forget the name of the theater.
It was we were supposed to go to Bakersfield, and it was supposed to be Dennis, Kool and the Gang, and Phyllis Hyman was supposed to be at this event. In fact, if you remember, we were on the tour bus, and we went there, and there was nobody there but birds flying around.
Right.
Nobody was there, right? Nothing but birds were flying around. And we continued back to L.A., and then what we did do the show at the Pig Fair, which was Pico and Fairfax. Right. We did do that show. That was crazy. That was wild.
Crazy,
now, you did a song, though, but prior to all that drama, or well, I think it was prior or after that, you did a song called Lover. In fact, you've done a lot of songs. You did Just in Time, which for you guys who are listening, you can go to YouTube and pull up Foxworth and the Jam. And it's a song called Just in Time. And I remember being here in Georgia one day. I was driving down the street. In fact, you came here to Georgia. We went to Kiss and promoted it to what is his name? Oh my God, he's a. I mean, I'm at a loss, but I'm gonna say his name. But just give me a minute, and I'll say his name. And he went ahead and said, "Okay, I'll play it." That's what he said. And one day, I'm driving down the street, and all of a sudden, bam! It comes on, and I damn near wrecked. Okay, I almost had an accident.
Yep.
The moment they said "Kiss 104." And here's Just in Time playing on the radio, and I'm just so proud of you and so proud of Darren. You guys put that out there, and we push it, and they finally played it. And then even the record chain that was here, which was called Turtles, stocked it.
Yeah.
You know, the 12-inch single, they stocked it. And then you also recorded other songs, which I wish I had copies like Freeze. I love Freeze, and Freeze would be a great song for what's happening now. That would be awesome. You need to redo that. And I know you guys who are listening are like, what the hell are they talking about? But Freeze would be perfect for what is going on now. But then you did a song called Lover with Shantae Moore, correct?
Yes. That was her first song. She was dating a football player here in San Diego. And he had a recording studio, and he asked me to run the studio. And on the downtime, I would do a lot of my own stuff. And he told me that his girl sang, and I said, okay, bring her in, and I'll never forget. Because she was a little thing. She walked in, and she had a big voice. She had a real big voice. And we did a duet, and it was the first recording that I know of that was put out with her on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it did fairly well. Being in those days, it was kind of hard to promote a record without back then. It was a lot of payola going on. If you remember that?
Right.
You wanted you to pay, and we weren't like that. We were going to go off the merit of the song and nothing at all. And so it was on a label that I had with a friend of mine, Kendall White, and it was called Deep Concept Recordings and Jamming Records.
Right, exactly. Yep, I remember that, Deep Concept. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That was my word.
And I remember, and I have to be honest, I do remember because because you came here to Atlanta, I was living here. You came here and you would stay here and promote. And I remember Just in Time, Kiss was in the Marietta area. For you guys who don't know, Marietta is north of Atlanta. It's a suburb. Okay, so Kiss was there at the time. Then Kiss moved to downtown Atlanta, and we tried to push Lover. And they were like, we don't know. But now look at Shantae Moore now, okay, or what she did after that, and years after that. And now she's doing live streams, like, every week on Facebook and got, a big following, So, wow, that's amazing.
We wrote, as a matter of fact, Shantae wrote some lyrics to a few songs that I had. One of them got her the deal over at MCA.
Really?
And that was Working Real Hard, song called Working Real Hard. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how she got her deal. Because it wasn't finished, and she just happened to be up there and played it for him. And it was Lil Silas and a few other guys up there, and they wanted her instantly. But,
there goes that name again, Lowell Silas.
And then, but they wanted they had big plans for her, and they wanted to hook up with the best producers in the business at the time, and which was like Babyface and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, and I was kind of like, you know, at that time nobody knew who I was, basically. Well, they knew who I was, but not on a production level like that. So,
right.
Yeah. She never did the song, though, and I still have the song. Still have the recording of it, you know.
You know, I intended to reach out to Shante. We are friends, and she did respond to me because what was so funny, she was on doing one of her live shows, and I texted her, and I asked her, does she remember doing that? She said, I was just listening to that song last week. She said, I love that song. So, and I hadn't got a response back as far as, well, I apologize. I was really trying to invite her to come on and join us. But we got to do this again. But we're not done. We still got a lot of time to talk. And you share a lot more because we got a few more tracks we're going to play. I'm trying to pull up the one track that you sent me, but I definitely want to play We'll Never Forget. You guys got to listen to this because what my brother did here is a tribute to all the individuals who were wrongly, well, I can't say wrongly, that's not the right word, who were murdered, lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Murdered, right. I said murdered. Murdered. And no justice has been done in their murders. I'm going to hold on to that for a moment. Yeah, I want to hold on to this for a moment. I want to wait until towards the end of the show. We got 20 more minutes. If you guys are listening, if you have any questions or comments, if you're on the board, I see numbers here, go ahead to hit the number one. In fact, Tom and Chip, you here? You still here, I think. Tommy, are you still there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You got any questions or comments for our guest, Mr. Joe Foxworth?
Well, Joe, I have to say, man, you have, you know, the fact that you stuck with it, even though you and your band broke up several times, you know, I'm a actor and stand-up comic and writer myself. So as an artist, man, you know, we just got to keep going. And it's great to know that you stuck to your game plan and made things happen. And you're still out there putting together great music. So, hey, you know, much success to you that you just keep rolling on.
I appreciate that, my friend. I really appreciate that. It's the ones who are persistent and consistent that'll make it, you know? And you don't have to be on top of the world. You just have to be a part of the world.
Right.
You know?
Good
and,
point.
All the fame and all that stuff, it doesn't matter. It matters that people get to see and hear your talent, you know, and what you're contributing to it. You know, that's what I love the most. I can't stop. I'm almost 100 years old.
You almost 100 years old. Hey, before you know it, hey, be thankful if you get to 100. That would be a blessing.
Okay.
You know.
Right.
You know.
I've been blessed.
That would be a blessing. They say that
I'm
people
happy.
Are living longer now.
Oh yeah, that's true.
No.
You
might
true.
Be one of the ones who might get to 100.
Maybe I get to 200.
Mm. Oh, so now you want to be Methuselah, 900 years old. Okay. All right. So I'm sorry, Tyron, were you about to ask a question? I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. I was listening.
Oh, okay. All right, so Joe, we went through all the stuff with the Ozone thing and the Motown thing and everything. As you shared, your dad had passed away, and I knew who your dad was. I know the church, New Revelations, in Pasadena, then in San Diego, the church there. That took a toll on you. You stepped away from the music, and you really got away from everything for a while.
Yeah.
Understandable, because I lost my mom and my dad. I lost my mom first, then I lost my dad. And to this day, it still, you know, bothers me to lose my dad. But, you know, I
almost,
still hear his...
It almost seems like...
To keep going, you know. Still, it's
yeah.
hard, and I understand that. And you and I had a conversation about that. It's really tough.
Yeah.
Losing your you know, to lose a sibling, which I've lost all three of my brothers, but to lose your parents
yeah.
is really tough.
Yeah.
After you went through that whole thing, what made you say, okay, I got to step up. I gotta do something. I gotta go back to recording and writing. What got you back into what you love to do after the, you know, the mourning?
Well, you know, I've always I kept on writing. I've always been writing, and
okay.
my mom is still around, and. I take care of her, you know, me and my brothers, and we take care of her and make
okay.
sure that she's happy. And, you know, the dream never left. It's just that focus had to change for a minute, because, you know, a lot of times when a loved one like that passes away, you know, usually, especially a husband and wife, you know, the other passes within months, you know.
Correct.
The first one passes. So
that's
we needed her to be around. We needed her to be around. And we needed her to be happy. So that was the main mm-hmm. focus. And now she's doing a lot better. And so I decided that now's the time. You know, I don't want to let my father down. I don't want to let my family down. I don't want to let my friends down.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about
wow.
them being able to hear the substance of the material that I have. It's all inspirational, basically. I don't deal in the negative. I want to deal in the positive. There's enough of the negative out there already. So I'm hoping that these songs will at least put a smile on somebody's face, or make their foot move, or, you know, bring out something positive in their lives and make for a change. So, you know, that's where I'm at, and I'm still at it. And I have a project that will be released on the 17th of this month. That's my father's birthday, in honor
wow.
of him and in the family, you know. So that's something I can always say, that my family's, they've always been there, through thick and thin. You know, you only get one, and then bringing you up, it's a learning process. They don't know what they're doing exactly when they're raising you, but they're doing the best that they can. And I can honestly say that I've had my mother and father in my life, my whole life. They've helped me, you know, to be the man that I am. And I'm still growing, you know. So.
Right. I have a few minutes left. I don't want to waste the time, because I want everyone to listen to this track. And I want you to introduce it. To everyone. I wasn't able to bring up the other one, but here's a track that you, a recent track. And I really like this, because you honor, which I had said before, the individuals who lost their lives for no reason whatsoever, called We Won't Forget. What made you decide to write that song? And once you give us that information, I want to go ahead and introduce it for us and give us a little background on that. Or better yet, let's let you introduce it, and then you give us the background on that song. How's that?
Okay. That works for me. Ladies and gentlemen, here is We Won't Forget.
We'll be right back.
These are the memories of our lives.
Well, it's pinwheeling, so I'm waiting for it to play. Because I do have it uploaded. It's pinwheeling.
Right,
what
on.
The hell, Block Talk? Oh, okay. Hold on. I'm going to try it again. Okay. I'll go ahead and pause it.
Okay.
Try it again. Because I do have it on the board, and I don't know.
second it, say a little bit about
it. Well, give us some information on the track, though.
Well, as a musician and a songwriter, you always want to be a part of what's happening, you know, and you want to make a contribution to society in a positive way. And I definitely wanted to make sure that these people, these are only the people that died in 2020, just 2020 alone. This has been happening for years,
right.
And it's something had to be said, and a lot of my counterparts are doing the same thing and have been doing the same thing, is bringing the awareness back up, because it'll die down, and we don't want it to die down. We want it to always stay in the public's eye until they do something about it. And so we're going to keep marching, keep protesting, whatever we have to do to make this change happen, we need to do it. And this was just me honoring those people who probably, some whose names have already been forgotten, you know, but we won't forget. These are the memories of our lives. Sounds like you might have had a glitch there, buddy.
Hey, Joe, are you there? I'm sorry. Hello? Can y'all hear me? Hello?
Joe gone.
No, Joe's still here.
Sure.
His mic is open.
I'm
sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. So my question was, you know, I apologize. I had myself on mute and didn't even realize it. That's my fault.
Yeah.
I mute myself. I just make it happen when somebody is talking. So before we run out of time, we got 5 more minutes left on the show. And for anyone who's on, hit the number one if you have a question or comment. And thanks for all of you for listening in. But, Joe, before we go, what would you like to share to people who want to get into the industry? You know, going back in time and you sharing all that stuff that you went through back when it was record label, but now you got a lot of different things going on. You got, you know, YouTube, folks are being discovered on YouTube now. They don't have to audition anymore in front of anybody, right? Like you did. Times have changed.
Right.
Folks are making beats. They send in beats. Honestly, I've got to say this. My granddaughter just recently sent in some music to Timberlin, right? He
really?
Put her on the bench, meaning like, you know, well, I'm going to put you over here for a moment. What would you recommend or what is your thoughts about what you went through, what's happening now, and what is the key thing in order that you see in order to be on that path of getting your music out there?
First of all, be in it for the right reason. You know, I'm in it because I love it. I love writing. I love seeing people's reactions to my performances, to my songs. And like I said a little bit earlier, and how it affects them, and hopefully they'll do it in a positive way. A lot of times nowadays, you know, people, the 15 minutes of fame thing, everybody wants to be famous, or they want to make billions and billions of dollars and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the wrong reasons to be in it for. You know, if you love it, you'll keep doing it. You know, do it because you love it, not because you want to, you know, get all the girls in the world, or, you know, it doesn't work like that. It don't work like that. It don't work like that. I mean, it does for some people, you know, but
right. You're right.
For the most part, it's about do it because you love it, you know, not because of any other reason. I mean, I could have been a typist. If I love typing, you know, I'm going to keep typing, you know, but that's not what I love. You know, I love music. I love writing music. I love performing music. And that's the way I say it like this, but that's the way I get off.
Right. Let me see if this will come back up. I'm trying. Oh, okay. I found it. So, okay. I got it.
Okay.
I got it. Okay. So before we get out of here, last comments from Time and Ship.
Hey, just keep doing what you're doing, man. The most success to you. You know, and you had a good point. You got to love what you do. You got to love it. You got to, because it is definitely a lot of rejection and, you know, but you got to stick with it and, you know, get out there in the world, do a lot of networking and meet different folks and, you know, and create those relationships, you know, that some people believe in what you're doing. And you've done that.
Yeah.
That's why you still work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Got that right. And it's an art. It's an art. Nobody does it like you do it.
Right.
So regardless of what critics might say, you know, hey, it's an art. Love it.
Wow. Now,
you know, we got a lot of critics. We got a lot of those.
Oh, yeah.
There's two of us. Well, I'm a little bit disappointed in Blog Talk because they really messed me up here because the moment I was able to get the board up, it went dead on me, and something is not working out right. So I apologize, you guys. We're going to get out of here. Thank you for listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, on a Saturday. We'll be back next week with another great show, as usual. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. I want to thank my special guest, Mr. Joe Foxworth, for joining us.
Thanks.
Joe, are you going to come back and visit us again?
Anytime for you, my friend. We go a long way back.
Yeah,
we've been
fam for years, man. And I'm looking at my system here, and it's saying that I don't have any internet connection. So what I do have is still a phone connection. I don't know what the heck is going on right now with the internet.
Okay.
But if you guys could still hear me, thank you so much. I appreciate Joe Foxworth, Time and Ship, all the callers and everything for joining us on this episode of the TMGS. We'll be back next Saturday live. And coming up, Miss Carrie Lucas is going to join us. You know, she's always joined us many a times. She's got some great stuff. The matriarch of Solar Records is coming back to the TMGS with her new material. And Sexual Chocolate is coming back. They're coming back because, you know, the last time that we talked about the movie, but this time you're going to talk to the individuals regarding the people that they have performed with over the years in their careers. Thanks again, you guys,
wow,
for joining the TMTS. Like I said, I'm having problems with the internet right now, so I can't shut down the show like I normally do. Hold on. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to have to just go ahead and shut down. God bless. Enjoy your weekend. Oh, hold on. Hold on. I think it's going to act right. I apologize. This has never happened. I mean, it just went dead. My screen just went dead, and I could not get the information that I wanted here. So now, for all the people who are on the internet, your connection is going to cut off, more than likely, before I get a chance to do this. And I want to see, because I just happened to test it out to see if it popped up.
You're doing good things, Mike.
We didn't get a chance to hear We Won't Forget, right? Because I had a problem with it, right? So let me see. I just happened to hit it. And the moment I hit it, it played, and then I paused it, and then all of a sudden the internet started acting up. So let's check this out if it plays right before we get out of here. You guys, check this out. Joe Casper.
These are the memories of the night.
It's not right. Good night, everybody. God bless.